Good morning, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome to UBS's Top of the Morning podcast. So today, as part of the CIO Strategy Snapshot edition of Top of the Morning, we will dive into the latest UBS House View, which outlines the roadmap to recovery for the economy and investor sentiment, along with the contributing factors to a recent spike in uncertainty over where markets might be headed in the near term. So joining me today for the conversation, pleased to welcome back Jason Dreho. Jason, as you know, is the head of asset allocation for the Americas from the UBS Chief Investment Office. So Jason, good morning to you. Hope you enjoyed a nice weekend and looking forward to our conversation today.
Good morning, Ken. It's good to be here again.
Absolutely. And Jason, up front, I do want to point out to our listeners and especially our clients that our conversation will be revolving around the November installment of the UBS House View, the Investment Strategy Guide, and the publication suite, Roadmap to Recovery is the title, and that piece is now available for our clients to reference up on UBS Online Services. Though I know the piece talks about, Jason, how heightened uncertainty around near-term outlooks for the economy and markets seems to have crept back up in recent times. So can you walk us through the contributing factors behind that?
There are, I think, four factors that I would point to, and I'll kind of cover them in sort of increasing order of, I think, what's kind of, you know, got the markets maybe most a little concerned. The first is, you know, the U.S. election. You know, we're just now over 2 weeks away. The polling results, you know, are clearly showing that Vice President Joe Biden, you know, is the likely winner of this. So the focus there is more now on the Senate outcome and how that will materialize and whether the Democrats will be able to gain enough seats to take control or not. So that's it's a lingering uncertainty. I think it's now shifted a little bit more to the Senate, which matters because any significant fiscal stimulus or tax increases that the Democrats will want to pass hinge on the Senate outcome. And I think a week ago, it seemed to be more of a consensus of the market pricing and blue wave. Now I think it's dialed back that a little bit just because of the Senate outcome. So that's one factor. The second is this ongoing debate about the fiscal stimulus and whether we'll kind of get something before or after the election. And then if it is after the election, you know, what size could it be, again, contingent on the election outcome. So the fact that this is continues to linger is just an ongoing sort of uncertainty. The third factor is, you know, the rising number of COVID-19 cases. I think in the U.S. we've now had numbers last week that were comparable to where we were in August. Still not quite as high as we were in July. But the more kind of concerning development is what's been happening in Europe, where now the total number of cases across Europe is somewhere upwards of almost 100,000 a day. Like in the U.K., they were averaging close to 20,000 a day late last week. And now you're seeing, you know, restrictions put on in terms of mobility. You know, talking with colleagues this morning in Zurich, the city, they said, like, it's clearly gotten very quiet. There's fewer people on the streets because now people are going back to basically working at home as opposed to they had sort of returned, you know, in decent numbers back to the offices. So the fact that as we move into the fall, the concern was the rising COVID cases. Well, it's materializing in Europe. It's ticking up a little bit in the U.S., not to the same extent, but that clearly has, you know, people concerned about the potential for further either, you know, absolute restrictions on mobility or people just choosing to kind of take those actions in their own hands. And the fourth and sort of final factor that's kind of a little bit more uncertain is the timeline for a vaccine. There's been a little bit of maybe slippage in the past week or so in terms of how soon we might get results from some of the phase 3 vaccine trials and therefore how soon things might be, you know, rolled out. And that, of course, you know, pushes back the timeline of when we might get, you know, the COVID situation fully under control and normalization. So I think all those four factors are contributing to a little bit of you know, heightened, you know, volatility. I think most recently it's been sort of the COVID situation that's shifted at least relatively up versus kind of the U.S. focus on U.S. politics, which has been dominating the discussion really for much of the past month.
Jason, to that point, maybe we can dive a bit deeper into a couple of those catalysts which might alleviate investor concern in a big way. So breakthroughs in terms of additional fiscal stimulus relief as well as progress on the vaccine front. I know the former remains very fluid. We're monitoring that House Speaker Nancy Pelosi did attach a 48-hour deadline, which expires tomorrow, Tuesday, as far as additional relief materializing. What are your thoughts there?
You're correct. So over the weekend, there was a report that House Speaker Pelosi and Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin had an hour-long conversation on Saturday. They agreed to continue discussing, and then it was announced that Pelosi had put on a 48-hour deadline, which would expire, you know, tomorrow night, to reach a deal. Now, we've seen in the past, you know, deals been announced or deadlines been announced, and they've been kind of walked back. So I think you have to kind of take that with a grain of salt. Also over the weekend, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said that the Senate Republicans will vote on another fiscal package, you know, this week. There was no details announced, but, you know, for context, they, you know, had voted on a package of around $500 billion just a few weeks ago. This is quite a bit less than what the Democrats have passed in the House, which is around $2.2 trillion, and with President Trump talking about a $1.8 trillion stimulus package, you know, just over the past week. So it's a lot to be kind of, kind of take in there. I think the likelihood is still that we wouldn't get our fiscal package before the election because it's only, you know, 14 days away. There's just not that many days to negotiate, especially if the Senate Republicans come back with a deal that's still not much larger than what they had before and the gap is significant. This might be some political posturing on both sides to say, like, we negotiated but we couldn't reach a deal, and they both can claim, go back to voters and saying it's the other side's fault. So I think it's unlikely we'd get something before then, but, you know, in politics, you never can rule anything out. On the vaccine front, I think the expectation is we'll still get results from Pfizer on their, vaccine trial either late this month or certainly by mid-November. Another company, Moderna, that also is expected to have, results for their vaccine coming out in mid-November. But two other companies that have had phase two trials, AstraZeneca and also Johnson & Johnson, they've had to halt them, at least in the U.S. in the case of AstraZeneca, because of, one case where a client had, got ill. It was unclear. It doesn't appear to be related to the vaccine itself, but I think that was still under investigation. So that, again, just sort of delays a little bit of when we're going to get results there. Consequently, the Good Judgment Project, which is an organization or entity, put together by sort of super forecasters or people who have some expertise on a subject matter trying to forecast up in the future, and they kind of collate, these forecasts to come up with sort of the probabilities. They've lowered their odds of inoculating 25 million sort of Americans, at least doses in the U.S. by March, from 70% in September down to 47%. So just kind of calibrate, like, what's the likelihood of reaching a certain threshold, dialed back, a decent amount, over the past month, given some of these news, the news we've heard on the kind of the vaccine developments. So it just seems, again, it's not, a significant delay, but it's a little bit lower or slower than was anticipated just a month ago. But we should get kind of greater clarity within a month. And for equity markets in particular, since they're forward-looking, if the results from Pfizer and from Moderna are positive in terms of their, efficacy rates, even if the rollout is a little bit delayed, they will trade on that good news because that implies that once it's rolled out, we will have an effective solution, and the market starts to price in that news immediately. They're not going to wait for the vaccine to be kind of worldwide on significant numbers by next spring. So that's the near term. Really over the next month, we'll get some clarity both certainly on the election outcome, therefore likely fiscal policy, but also a better kind of sense of when the vaccine could be rolled out and how soon.
Jason, as you suggested, there's much investor focus on the events taking place over the next few weeks, the election perhaps chief among them. So it's very easy to get caught up in terms of what we're currently dealing with. But Jason, why would you say it's important that investors not be short-sighted, look past near-term uncertainty, and really focus on their longer-term investment plan?
Well, as a strategist right now, what I'm trying to do, and everything I've covered thus far on the call, is we're trying to predict, political outcomes and medical solutions, neither one of which is really kind of directly forecasting economic data or corporate earnings. These are hard things for anyone to predict, and certainly as investors. And if you try to predict them or try to invest around them, I think we've seen that it's a challenging thing to do. So it's best for people not to necessarily try and time the markets based on that news flow, but look through it and think about the underlying economic trends and where that is headed. And I think that's generally positive. But for investors, they should have plans that are based on sort of the long-term outlook and not be too sensitive to these near-term, potentially market-moving events that are just very difficult to predict. So I think ultimately the long-term success depends much more on being disciplined and having a diversified portfolio in the context of a robust financial plan. And when we do get volatility, as we likely to experience over the next few weeks, this is a chance to have opportunities to either implement tactical positions, to increase yields if credit spreads widen out, or to invest at a more at a gradual, deliberate pace. So think about this as an opportunity to kind of further refine your portfolio towards achieving long-term goals, as opposed to an opportunity or situation where you need to significantly de-risk or try and kind of conjecture or guess what is the outcome. And I think that's when you do that, that's when you tend to ultimately fail. having that long-term plan gives you that discipline to avoid some of those mistakes.
So, Jason, with that all being said, what is CIO's market outlook as we approach year-end and even into early 2021? I'm sure many, myself included, are looking forward to turning the page on 2020.
I think we all are at this point in time. Look, for the next few weeks, expect some volatility, just as the market reacts to the news on the election, on what it means for fiscal stimulus, but then also with the, you know, the situation with both the COVID second wave spread and vaccine developments. There's a lot of things that could move the markets one way or another. And on top of that, just sort of how investors are positioned. In some cases, there's some froth that is still in parts of the equity market, like in the tech sector. There's certainly kind of a view of interest rates rising. Depending on how things play out, you could see sort of investors readjust their portfolios, meaning institutional investors, and that could just add some sort of noise to the market over the next couple of weeks. If we get through that, if things sort of evolve in a way that we get clarity on the election outcome, we get more clarity on that, on when we're going to get more fiscal spending, so the market can at least kind of price that in, and then we get clarity on the vaccine timeline, it sets up for a situation where at least kind of through the rest of the year, which typically ends up being a good time for equity markets and risk assets, could be a positive tailwind into the year end and into really kind of providing momentum for the next 6 to 9 months. But I think we have to get through the next few weeks before that sort of materializes. So that's kind of how we see that the rest of the year playing out.
Jason, with that outlook in mind as a closing point, how should investors be allocated in order to take advantage of these opportunities?
So first off, I think to the previous question, stay invested. And look for ways to sort of enhance your portfolio as opposed to significantly kind of de-risk at this time. Our view is, looking through the near-term uncertainty and noise, is that it's a relatively positive on the next 6 to 9, even 12 months, given what we expect is ultimately more fiscal stimulus during that time period for a vaccine to start to be rolled out on some different way to help normalize economic activity. So there's still upside for risk assets, whether it is equities or for credit spreads to tighten. And what we really kind of favor is the positions that, that should benefit when that scenario plays out. So things that would kind of almost benefit from a bit of rotation and reflation in the marketplace, and things that have kind of lagged in the recovery this year. So for example, we've had a preference for mid-cap equities over large-cap equities. And we've seen at least this month a bit of outperformance, on the expectations of that recovery really kind of accelerating. Similarly, on a sector basis, we upgraded financials to most preferred last week, and also have industrials as another most preferred. So in the sector allocation, a little more kind of cyclical tilt to it to get a play for this kind of recovery, bit of higher inflation, a little bit higher interest rates as we go through year end, along those lines, kind of within fixed income, liking exposure to TIPS as a way to protect against at least for higher inflation. The prospect of higher interest rates, and when I'm talking about, say, a 10-year rising from the low 70 basis point range to perhaps 90 basis points by year end, shifting into areas that are a little bit less interest rate sensitive. So, for example, in credit, senior loans versus high yield, we kind of prefer senior loans because they don't have that interest rate exposure. And then also just another area that tends to do well in this kind of reflation scenario is commodities. And we've seen them perform again reasonably well for the past month. So that's where we think there's some opportunities and some upside. And given that, the news can change very quickly on the positive front, having those positions now, even leading up to the election, even if there is volatility, gets you sort of set for the upside. But given how much volatility is, we wouldn't suggest making large, significant moves into these positions, just because, there is a risk that the election could end up being contested, the outcome may not materialize as the market expects. And on the medical front, the vaccine results may not be, as investors hope. So there's certainly some scope for downside, but generally we see a direction of travel, equities and other risk assets, to be higher over the next 6 to 12 months.
Well, Jason, very productive conversation and helpful insights to begin what will be another busy and perhaps fluid week in the market. So great catching up with you. And thank you for walking us through, Jason, the UBS Houseview Investment Strategy Guide for the month of November. Again, roadmap to recovery. So I'm sure we'll speak again soon, Jason. Thank you for joining us on Top of the Morning today.
You're welcome. Have a good day.
Thank you, Jason. You as well. And again, today we have been joined by Jason Draho, the head of asset allocation for the Americas from the UBS Chief Investment Office. So before we close out, I do want to remind our listeners and especially our clients, many publications and blogs available now for you up on UBS Online Services. And that, of course, includes the UBS House View publication suite for the month of November. That includes the Investment Strategy Guide and the monthly letter by Mark Kafley, Global Chief Investment Officer. A Roadmap to Recovery is the title there. So for UBS clients, please be sure to reach out to your financial advisor if you would like to receive a copy of the November UBS House View directly. Though, as I mentioned, the piece can now be located for you up on UBS Online Services. Top of the Morning, we'll be back again for you tomorrow morning. Have a great day, everyone.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.